Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Haw, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Pitching coach Tommy Hottovy of the Cubs wearing the blue pullover.
Tommy Hottovy, pitching coach for the Chicago Cubs.
You're transitioning from being a player to kind of getting into baseball. You take an online class, was it, at Boston U? Sabermetrics 101?
Yeah. I was a finance major in college, and I had an economics minor. A lot of it was, too, I'm going to refresh all my econ knowledge, and I'm going to do it in a baseball course. It's like one of the best things ever.
There's just a lot of trust there with Tommy. We know he's such a hard worker. He puts in all the hours and really, really knows what he's talking about when it comes to pitching.
Tommy Hottovy, breaking down the starting rotation and bullpen on the north side with Mully and Hall.
I'm here for one reason. I want to help these guys get better, and we want to win baseball games.
Tommy Hottovy on 670 The Score. The Score.
Tommy!
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Leila Rahimi in for Mully today, and we're pleased to welcome Tommy Hottovy, our regular guest here on the show, to the program. And Tommy joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Tommy.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well. It is a fun day to be a Cubs fan, and I have to think that you, like many Cubs fans, when you're sitting there last night and watching Progressive Field and seeing the Cubs on the same turf where they won the 2016 World Series, I would imagine, even though you played the Indians in 2018, it is still a trip down memory lane. What were your emotions like going back into that ballpark, and how much reminiscing did you do before the action?
You know, anytime you get a chance to go to that ballpark, and we kind of talked last night, a few of us, just about ballparks in general you go to throughout your career and what they mean, you know, and what they mean to you. And a lot of it's tied to those good memories. And it's no different, obviously, for us, you know, here in Cleveland. And the way the game started yesterday with that first pitch of the game, that tapper to KB, who's playing in and kind of comes across the infield like that, it was almost like deja vu. Like, we'd seen that, obviously, we've seen that play before. Luckily for us, 4 years ago, he made a little better throw to first base. You know, Rizzo had to dig it out last night. But, I mean, we're all thinking that same thing. It was just amazing to get to see that. And then the flood of those memories started coming back. So, absolutely, you know, fun to be here and be able to kind of rehash some of those memories we had from, you know, a few years ago.
Yeah, Tommy, it was definitely shades of 2016 when we all saw that out. But the ball was also down, which is a nice thing to see. And you can't say enough about what John Lester has done this season. He has just made it look so easy. And even the individual games, it's not just the numbers, but how the one run was allowed in the sixth, you know, times through the order, of course, mattering there. But how do you put into words what he's been able to do and how he's been able to do it, just making everything look so simple, when as a veteran, there were questions going in as to whether or not Lester would still have gas in the tank. He is proving it day in and day out.
You know, absolutely. I think, you know, seeing what he's been able to do, not only, you know, through the shutdown and the quarantine that we had, you know, before the season started, and how he tried to manage his throws and all the things we wanted to to do to get him, you know, into the season and feeling good and feeling healthy. But, you know, as the game has evolved, it's easy for pitchers to kind of like, you know, kind of want to do more, kind of want to move the ball around more and do different things. And sometimes that works out, you know, and you match up to the right teams and that works. But it's really important in this game to focus on what's given you success in the past too. And sometimes you have to hit that reset button to get back to it. And one thing I'll give credit to, you know, to John is he really, really has worked hard at getting his angle back, recreating some of that angle and that, that John Lester drive kind of down in the strike zone that he had earlier in his career. And you know, what you're starting to see are those early weak swings, the pulled foul balls by righties, the choppers into the ground, those types of things. When you see that angle he's creating, it really, really makes a big difference for him. And then you add in the fact that he's also, you know, mixing in his changeup more, and he's able to pitch backwards a little bit more and do those things. And it's fun to watch. He's a veteran guy and been in some of the biggest games, you know, around. And when he's on a roll like this, he's obviously a guy you want on the bump and in good spots.
Tommy, athletes are creatures of habit, kind of slaves to protocol. And your pitchers have had to deal with, you know, a time off here that was because of the Cardinals series, 4 days of rest. You had to reconfigure your pitching rotation. I think John Lester said yesterday he flew into during the day of the game for the first time since AAA. There's some real difficult circumstances that are fluid, and you have to be adaptable. What's the prevailing message that you tell your guys, whether you're moving them in the rotation or dealing with the uncertainty of the schedule? What is the thing that you tell them to focus on the most, and how do you avoid not letting those things get in the way of their focus?
You know, when you have something taken away from you that you love, and we all had that, you know, to start the season, you know, even the people that talk about the grind of the 162 game season, when you have that taken away from you, it's, you don't want to take things for granted anymore. And I think what we talk about and what I see with these guys this year is their love for the game, the willingness to do whatever they have to do to win every single night, and just the love to get to come to the ballpark every day. So when it is little things like, you know, John, a veteran pitcher, having to fly out the morning of his flight and handling it the way he handled it, you know, having guys start shifting around and things move, we're just taking this in stride, and we're taking this day to day, and we're communicating with them on, you know, what we think is best for them, what we think is best for the team, and being able to move it around. And, you know, we had guys over the 3 days this weekend throw bullpens. We had a few guys pitching sim games, trying to match up how they've done and how many games they've pitched and who needed work and all those things, and just communicating and then trying to make it fun, you know, in the same process. And these guys are really, you know, I've commended them just on the work they put in, but also just the mindset that they had to come to the park every day with that joy and that love of the game, and, you know, very appreciative of what we get to do right now during this time.
Tommy, last night, not just nice because of Lester's six innings, but then what happened after that? Bullpen deserves a little love because you had Ryan Tepera and then Colin Ray. No walks, only one hit between the two of them in those next three innings. How can you build on that knowing you didn't use a ton of arms and you're moving forward against a Cleveland team that can swing the bat top to bottom in that lineup?
Yeah, we, you know, all of our guys out there, the work they're putting in, we continue to see progress with everybody. And I think, you know, as we continue this season and we keep gaining confidence, I think you're going to see some guys really step up out there. Getting to see, you know, Colin Ray pitch again last night and getting him to that two innings and the importance of, you know, keeping him as stretched out as we possibly can. I think people saw the stuff that he had in that one inning stint with KC. But also the value a guy like that can bring, that can give us some length when we need to. So as much as we want to get as many guys worked as we can in those situations, we also, you know, for those guys, we need to make sure that we can keep them, you know, their pitch counts stretched out and things. So we have them available for games that, you know, may happen later, either an early start, a doubleheader day, you know, which we may have, you know, coming up soon too. So, yeah, it was great. It's good to see those guys continuing to improve and continuing to work, and the results are going to show.
Tommy, David Ross talked about the progress he saw in Craig Kimbrell during the Sunday scrimmage. He had two strikeouts and allowed a hit in 11 pitches, and he referenced some changes, some tweaks to the mechanics. And I'm curious, because a guy as accomplished and proud as Kimbrell is, at this stage of his career, you see these discussions and conversations about his mechanical adjustments. How do players – is this an ongoing thing with guys that they always are going to be making these mechanical adjustments? Because at this point of his career, you would think that there would be a repeatable thing that he would lean on, or how would you describe what he's going through right now and how common it is?
It's extremely common. I think any time, especially in a season or an off season where you don't get as much work in as you need to, and there's no knock on him. I think he works really hard. I think just in general, there were off seasons where I felt like I had to retrain my arm stroke. You know, it just didn't feel right. Something was off, you know, like you have to constantly do it. Or even the veteran guys that, you know, the John Lesters, the Darvish, you know, those Hendricks, things we're constantly monitoring to make sure that we're, you know, focus on the things mechanically that make him the best version of himself. And the other part of it too is, as guys, you know, veteran guys especially, as they get older and they have cues and mechanical things they work on, well, maybe their body doesn't move quite the same way. You know, maybe one little thing, maybe they lose a tiny bit of flexibility in, you know, their lower back or their hamstring or their, you know, their hips or things like that. You know, you have to constantly be tweaking those as well. And when we didn't get a chance to get eyes on guys very much during that quarantine, we had pitch data, and we could see even in the pitch data when he was playing catch as he was getting ready to come to that summer camp, we could tell, you know, the slot was a little off. So we kind of had an idea going into it where it was, but we didn't have like the eyes on him that we did once we got to summer camp. So by that point, you're juggling, okay, let's get him in the routine he needs to get to the season, but also get him the work and the mechanical things, the adjustments he needs to make, you know, to be the best version of himself. And, you know, one thing we all do when you're trying to get ready for the season, the number one thing that you look up to is the radar gun. You know, how's the velo? And then you start chasing velo, and maybe you do things mechanically that you think are helping you, but are really, you know, deterring you, maybe give you velocity, but maybe you lose some of that movement that you need, that some of that vertical ride or some of that deception that makes you better version of yourself. So, you know, I think what we saw the other day from Craig, especially in that same game, was just a much more controlled version. Did a great job of kind of staying over the rubber, and in a game where, you know, he could control those emotions, and obviously when you're playing against your own team, you know, it's, that game doesn't mean anything, but the positives of doing the things that he's working on mechanically, and then to see the pitch movement, see the velocity still be the same, just reassures the player that you don't have to do too much when you are under control and make sure you get your hands in the right position at release. So many good things can happen. I think when you're searching and when you're in a season, you don't have that time to work on or to back off and non-leverage situations, you keep searching, you keep reaching, and it was a good opportunity for him and a good outing, you know, for sure, something to build off of.
If there's one takeaway I have from this impromptu coaching session, it is that less is more this morning. But in Kyle Hendricks' case, it also is translating to more innings. I know he threw 7, had a very nice outing against the Royals, ended up with just 2 runs allowed in that one. A nice rebound for him after the Reds game. He goes into this Indians game, first time since game 7. What are you expecting to see out of Hendricks? It sounds like that Cincinnati game, Tommy, was just an aberration.
Yeah, we like to think so. Just with what you believe Kyle can do every night out. And even if there is a blip on the radar, you know what he's going to bring to the table for your team, you know, night in, night out when he's you know, on that lineup card. I expect to see a very similar version of what we've seen, you know, against the Royals in earlier in the year. Kyle's work is in between starts is as good as it gets. His routine is you know, locked in. I think he feels great, and you know, it's going to be cool to see him on that mound again. You know, I believe for the first time since Game 7. So he's in a great spot. We're looking forward to get him out there and just continue to roll. And again, just getting to see these guys feed off each other from one start to the next and how they communicate. With the new rules with the dugouts and how many people you can have in there and how separated you have to be, it's been pretty interesting to see the starters kind of congregate together in this, like, auxiliary dugouts, still with the team, but also how they congregate and they sit there and they talk during the games and the conversations they have, I know, are benefiting each other and continuing to get better as a group.
That'd be a good podcast, Tommy. Maybe you could record one of those conversations for us. Maybe play it next week. You could have the starters pitching. I mean, how about that?
Yeah, that'd be cool. Or at least have somewhere fans can call in and ask questions during the game.
That'd be great. Thanks. Hired. We approve. Tommy, thanks so much. Stay safe, stay healthy, and enjoy your time in Cleveland.
I appreciate it, guys. You too. Thank you.
Good stuff. Tommy Hotovy, the Cubs pitching coach, who joins us from Cleveland, talking about Kyle Hendricks starting tonight back at the scene of his Game 7 glory in 2016 for the first time. That will be fun to watch. It'll be right here on The Score tonight. And we will be shifting gears next. Leila Rahimi, we will be talking hockey with Charlie Roumeliotis from NBC Sports Chicago. What went wrong for the Blackhawks against the Golden Knights in Game 1 of the Western Conference playoffs? We will find out next. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
You like it? You think Cleveland's cool? I mean, I never heard anybody say I'm going to Cleveland on vacation.
Well, we know it's going to be a grind. They're an excellent team. They're going to make you work for your chances, and we got to make them work for theirs. And I thought for the most part we did that. And that's, we got to understand that's what's required to win. We're not happy. We're not satisfied. We got to finish the job. But you know, the Edmonton series, like, they have some, Edmonton has some really high-end players, and with their speed, you know, it kind of breaks down the structure of the game. Vegas is a different team. So, you know, it was a more controlled situation, and I thought we were fine for a lot of the game.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Leila Rahimi in for Mully today. That was the voice of Blackhawks coach Jeremy Colleton following the 4-1 loss last night to the Vegas Golden Knights in the Western Conference playoffs, and we are pleased to welcome to the program Charlie Roumeliotis, who works for NBC Sports Chicago, and that is where we got the clip from, NBC Sports Chicago and NBCSportsChicago.com. Charlie joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Charlie. Thanks for getting up.
Good morning, David and Leila. How are you guys?
Doing well. Sleepy. Doing well. Yeah, a little bit sleepy probably after staying up to watch that, and it was a tough game to watch at times, Charlie, because the Blackhawks only managed 20 shots on goal. I know that it's a tight-checking Vegas team. I know their defense and their depth and their talent is different than the Edmonton Oilers, but if you're the Blackhawks and Jeremy Colleton, what is the lesson that you learned the most after a Game 1 loss?
Well, I think the lesson is that this might be more of a tight-checking series than an out-chancing series, maybe like we saw in the regular season. I remember there was a national TV game earlier in the year where Corey Crawford and Marc-Andre Fleury were just standing on their heads. It was back and forth, rush chance after rush chance, and it was just all transition game, right? This did not have that feel. It was very low scoring. Both teams were playing conservatively, and I don't know how much of that was trying to, you know, feel each other out and who was going to dictate the pace of play, but it really didn't feel like the Golden Knights, who are the number one possession team across the board in every offensive category you look at, and the Blackhawks are very, you know, much at the very bottom of all those defensive categories. It didn't feel like they really dominated play. Like, it was just a very low scoring, tight checking game. And I know the Blackhawks only recorded 20 shots on goal and Vegas recorded 34. So you look at that and you think it was lopsided, but the chances were pretty much even at even strength, high quality scoring chances and just regular scoring chances. They were pretty much even. So it's going to be interesting to see how this game one impacts the rest of the series and whether it will be like this going forward or if maybe teams are playing a little bit more conservatively in game one.
Yeah, Charlie, you and groupthink seem to be in the same opinion that the Hawks needed to start strong, and neither team really did that in the first period. If the Hawks had scored a goal earlier, do you think we would have seen perhaps a different turnout in this game, even though it got so lopsided toward the end of that second period and then the two extra goals after that?
Yeah, it's probably a different story if they do score the first goal because it was so tight checking. And even when, you know, through the first 20 minutes, like, we didn't get a power play from either side, which was very different from the Blackhawks-Oilers series where it seemingly there was a penalty every other 2 minutes. And so, you know, you wonder if it's going to stay like that for the rest of the series. And I do think that, you know, it was through 40 minutes, the Blackhawks were probably in a good position as far as where how they were playing. And you can look at some of the goals that Corey Crawford let up as maybe the difference maker. And if Corey Crawford was at his best, maybe it's a different outcome. But I don't want to pin it on him because I did feel like, on one hand, it was encouraging that the Blackhawks did kind of hang with the Vegas Golden Knights at even strength. But on the other hand, you're like, man, this is an opportunity to take game one or steal game one from Vegas when they weren't at their best. And they were certainly at their best defensively, but they weren't at their best offensively, where they really come at you in waves. And so you wonder if that's going to come back to haunt the Blackhawks.
That's a really good point. And I think the Blackhawks penalty kill has been really very strong and was strong again last night. But offensively, Charlie, I watch Kirby Dach, and every time I see him, I think he's made tremendous strides. And I don't think he realizes how good he can be yet, but he's growing into that body and he's growing into his skill set. But I keep on saying to myself, my inner hockey fan is like, shoot the puck, kid, because he lacks that shoot first mentality. And once he gets that, he's going to be dangerous. But last night, I think it cost the Hawks in a couple different times.
Yeah, and I think he's one of those players that as soon as the play happens, he knows he should have shot the puck, but he's still having a hard time looking off, or he's still having a hard time really just having a shoot first mentality. And I don't know what exactly he saw in that break. I mean, because it happened within the first minute of the game, and so it could have been a crucial, you know, launching point for the Blackhawks. And even Vegas had a chance the other way literally a couple minutes later, and so it could have been that game that we thought it would be, where it would be transition and chance after chance after chance, and then it really settled down. But yeah, Kirby is a guy that he was very clearly a difference maker in that Edmonton Oilers series, and they're really going to need to get his line going, especially, you know, with Patrick Kane and Alex DeBrincat on it. That was one of the worst lines statistically when it came from a possession standpoint. I think they were on the ice for 10 scoring chances allowed of Vegas' 18 at even strength. So I think that line really needs to get going if the Blackhawks want to have a shot at making this a competitive series.
Charlie, that's what I was going to ask you about next, was that DeBrincat Kane line. And then Patrick Kane's playoff gold relative drought still continues, at least as far as one game is concerned, through this situation. So I ask you, at what point do you worry about Patrick Kane's scoring chances in this series? And do you think that Alex DeBrincat and that line is going to show up a little bit more in game two?
Yeah, I honestly don't know what the exact answer is. Like, we would have to really break down the film and figure out what's happening. I think, you know, they were able to get away with it in the Edmonton Oilers series because every other line was going. Like, the fourth line was chipping in. Jonathan Toews was being Jonathan Toews. Corey Crawford looked like Corey Crawford in the final game. And so they were getting contributions, you know, spotty contributions here and there. That was the difference. But in a series like against Vegas, and a team against, like Vegas, they throw four lines at you, and they have three defensive pairings that are really good, and they have the best goaltending duo in the NHL with Leonard and Fleury. So there are no holes on this roster, and so they can't afford to have one line not going, and that line being Dach, DeBrincat, and Kane. You know, so I don't know exactly what the answer is, and whether it needs to be a structural change, whether it needs to be an X's and O's breakdown, or if it, you know, you kind of put Patrick Kane on a different line. I don't know if I want to read too much into that game one, but I think it's stemming from the Edmonton Oilers series where DeBrincat and Kane weren't at their best. So we'll have to monitor that storyline going forward.
Charlie, I know it's not as simple as saying that Robin Lehner outplayed Corey Crawford, but Robin Lehner outplayed Corey Crawford, and two of the goals against Crawford were on shots that he typically stops, and it was the first and the last goal, and I don't know what to attribute that to. It certainly probably wasn't rust, but it didn't seem like he was himself last night. Meanwhile, Lehner, he only had 20 shots at him. He stopped 19 of them, and he also dealt with the blades breaking, and that was the most uncomfortable he looked all night. A little bit drama that's always seems to be included when Robin Lehner is involved. How did you see the goalie matchup?
Yeah, I think if Corey Crawford certainly stops the, you know, those two pucks, it really is a different story. And, you know, I don't want to completely pin it on him, because obviously there were a lot of different reasons why the Blackhawks lost, and there was an opportunity there for the taking, especially in that first period where they had a couple of early chances. And even the second period, I was looking at the second period, and the Blackhawks outchanced the Golden Knights 9-2 at even strength. And so they had their chances, and, you know, one goalie obviously, you know, was making sure that those chances weren't going in, and Lehner, and the other, obviously, Corey Crawford was struggling with the puck tracking. So, yeah, maybe I guess you can look at it as a difference, but I don't think it was the reason they lost. But they're certainly going to need Corey Crawford to be close to his best to beat the Vegas Golden Knights, because Robin Lehner is most likely going to be on his A game for all seven games, unless they really start to generate some momentum on the power play and really get into his head, like as far as net front presence and just being a pest in front. Like, you know, we saw Kirby Dock and some of those players provide earlier.
Charlie, I think we haven't given enough love to the Blackhawks goal that they did score this morning, even though it was just one. What do you think of that pass from Brandon Saad?
Well, it's funny because they ended up scoring a shorthanded goal, and it was a controversial challenge because no one really knew what the offside rule was. Did the new rule go into effect where your skate can be lifted and it doesn't, you know, all it has to do is break the plane, or does your skate still need to be on the blue line? And so it was funny because, you know, it was kind of a big deal, because it's like, well, wait, did the coaching staff not know what the rule was, or you know? So it was funny asking Jeremy Colleton that after the game, and, you know, he's kind of like, ah, well, we thought his skate was on the ice, and so it was legit. But then it was like, oh, wait, they scored a shorthanded goal on that. So it actually ended up being a blessing in disguise. But, yeah, Brandon Saad very clearly started that play, and it was a great shot by David Kemp. But I think that's the Brandon Saad we're so used to seeing in these postseason moments. And he was really good against the Edmonton Oilers, too. And so you hope that Brandon Saad can continue playing at that level against the Vegas Golden Knights.
Eddie O knew. He told us. He said exactly what was right, and he had the right call. Good for Eddie O being able to see that from his vantage point. Before we let you go, Charlie, real quick, any alterations to the lineup do you expect? You think that he might tinker with that first power play because it hasn't produced the results, and maybe see what DeBrincat can offer again, or do you think that's going to be the lineup and the way that he goes in game two, the way he went in game one?
I think they'll keep the first power play unit the same, because they only got two opportunities, and, you know, I didn't feel like it was enough for them to kind of feel each other out. But it is going to be interesting to monitor how they handle the top six and how they handle Patrick Kane's line, because if Patrick Kane's line is not going, that's three of their big-time scorers on the same line, DeBrincat, Dock, and Kane. And if that line gets dominated at even strength possession-wise again, that's going to be a problem. And so then maybe you consider, you know, putting Strome with DeBrincat, or putting Strome with Kane again, or divvying up the ice time load, you know, however maybe you did it in game one where you put Nylander with Strome and Kane. I don't know. That you have to kind of figure out a solution on the fly here, but that's the storyline I would be following. And maybe if Jeremy Colleton does go back to the same lines, it's got to be a quick hook, because if the Vegas Golden Knights take advantage really quickly, then you have to start doing something differently.
You can read his stuff at NBCSportsChicago.com. Charlie Roumeliotis, thank you very much for getting up and joining us this morning.
Thanks, guys. Have a good rest of your morning.
You too. Charlie is all over the Blackhawks, and he will have coverage throughout the series and probably join us a couple times again as this progresses. Wait until you hear what the Cleveland Indians, one Cleveland Indian, had to say about the teammates that let the team down and violated protocol. Next, with Mully and Haw, with Layla Rahimi in for Mully, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This hour brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
Blackhawks lose. They fall in Game 1 to the Golden Knights in Round 1 of the Stanley Cup Playoffs. Keep it on the score as we recap the loss, analyze what went wrong, and get you ready for Game 2 right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station.
Does your business specialize in kitchen and bath remodeling? Studio 41 is your complete kitchen and bath resource, now featuring the bold look of Kohler. We work with you, providing the service and support to help you get the job done right. Visit a showroom or find us online at shopstudio41.com.
Geico presents quick ways to change your life. Today, try taking a walk at lunch to someplace you've never been. You could also change your life by getting to know your local Geico agent, so you could save on more than just car insurance. Oh, and since you'll be walking somewhere new, please bring a GPS so we don't have to come find you.
This segment brought to you by Burlington Stores. Have you been to a Burlington lately? They have unbelievable deals on amazing brands and styles at up to 60% off other retailers' prices. No coupons or sales, just fabulous values every single day, whether it's back to school, work, or just back. You'll love Burlington.
Mr. Clean. Most people know that Mr. Clean Magic Eraser removes crayon and scuff marks from walls, but did you know it even cleans tough kitchen and bathroom messes that are sometimes tough to tackle? Just wet, squeeze, and erase gray soap scum on your bathtub. Erase cloudy hard water spots in your shower. Erase burnt on stovetop messes. So for all your tough kitchen and bathroom messes, try Mr. Clean Magic Eraser. Mr. Clean.
These days, it's okay to do some things halfway, like wearing your pajama bottoms on a work call. But managing your prescriptions shouldn't be one of them. That's why CVS has a proprietary search tool to find ways that may help lower your prescription costs, and will deliver them too. No wonder CVS customers are better than most at staying on prescriptions, which tends to make you healthier. Come in or call today and get a free prescription savings review at CVS. Savings vary. Not all patients eligible for savings. Ask pharmacist for details.
The segment brought to you by Amco Transmissions and Total Car Care.
For over 50 years, Amco's expert technicians have been fixing cars right the first time. And with easy payment options for all credit needs, you can fix your car right now. Search AAMCO for a location near you.
The best thing about the Powerball jackpot is that even when it's small, it's huge. It is now over $150 million. If you don't already have $150 million, winning $150 million could be a real game changer, right? So play Powerball. Download the app or play online. Be smart, play smart. Must be 18 or older to play.
Hitting the road this summer? Do what truck drivers do. Bring plenty of 5-hour energy. You'll get the alert, energized feeling you need to get to where you're going and do everything you want to do when you get there. It's small, light, and portable, like it was made for road trips. Just crack it open, knock it back, and keep both hands back on the wheel. Because when it comes to road trips,
oh dear, yeah.
Safety comes first. 5-hour energy, energy on the go. For more information, visit 5hourenergy.com.
Only one station in Chicago won the prestigious Edward R. Murrow Awards for Best Newscast, Breaking News Coverage, and Overall Excellence.
And it's not public radio.
For 2 years running, that station is WBBM.
Chicago's only nonstop news radio station.
105.9 FM, 780 AM, WBBMNewsRadio.com.
Available on the Radio.com app.
Or by asking your smart speaker to play WBBM News Radio.
Vacation voucher and maximum tax deduction.
1-877 cars for kids. KARS cars for kids. 1-877 cars for kids. Donate your car today.
Also accepting boats, motorcycles, RVs, and real estate donations.
Morning.
How'd you get in my house, B?
Through the air conditioning vent. It's dark in there.
Go away.
How about some Honey Nut Cheerios?
Cheerios. Do I look like a child to you?
Honey Nut Cheerios are tasty and can help lower cholesterol as part of a heart-healthy diet. Did you just
No.
I'm pretty sure I heard a
It was my dryer.
You might want to get that thing checked out.
Have a change of heart. Honey Nut Cheerios. Learn more about Honey Nut Cheerios by picking up a box at your local store.
For muscle pain, body aches, to strains, Blue Emu Maximum Arthritis. It works fast and you won't stink. Its unique formula with emu oil penetrates deep to relieve arthritis pain, sore muscles, joints, and more.
Mully and Hall will be back in 60 seconds on 670 The Score.
As you get back to business, small things can make a big difference. Like marking safe distances with floor tape and posting reminders to wash hands. As always, Grainger is here to help, offering supplies and solutions for every industry. Free access to product specialists, 24/7 support, safety recovery guides, and more. It's part of our commitment to help you adapt and recover in these challenging times. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Indeed knows you've got big goals for your business, and we understand hiring is a crucial part of that. You need to hire people who will make a real impact. Indeed can help you find those important hires faster while paying only for what you need without any long-term contracts, thanks to our super flexible payment options. Start finding your important hire today with a free $75 credit for your first job post and get in front of more quality candidates. Go to Indeed.com/high impact. That's Indeed.com/high impact. Terms and conditions apply.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The opening bell brought to you by CarX Tire and Auto.
They hurt us bad. They lied to us. They sat here in front of you guys and publicly said things that they didn't follow through on. And it's going to be up to them. It really is. And, you know, I'll let them sit here and tell you how they're going to earn their trust back. I don't need to put words in their mouths.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Layla Rahimi in for Mully today has done a terrific job, and that was the voice of Indians pitcher Adam Plutko, who talked about how his teammates let him down. Clevinger, and who was supposed to pitch last night against the Cubs, I believe, and our guy Zach Plesac, Layla, the Ball State grad from Crown Point, Indiana, and I know that parting was a minor offered at Ball State, but that is not the behavior you want or expect from a professional athlete. Number one, it was disappointing that they violated protocol in the way that they did after he beat the White Sox on Saturday, and then how they handled it in lying to teammates and misleading them. And Zach Plesac had to drive back to Cleveland in a rental car. Clevinger rode the team plane, which was even worse. But seldom do you hear publicly teammates go after one another in the way that Plutko did. And I have to say that more where that came from, because I think you have to find a way to hold these guys accountable, and that's all part of it. They made a mistake, and it was a bad one.
It was, and that tweet that came across from Mandy Bell, who covers the Indians, was jarring to read, because I think as honest as it is to hear, it's even more severe to read. Just the saying, they hurt us bad, they lied to us. And we saw how that situation unfolded. And I think the biggest takeaway I had from it, David, wasn't just the fact that they felt betrayed as teammates, but they were also all thinking of Carlos Carrasco, understandably so. Here he comes back from leukemia. It was an amazing comeback. Who's not cheering for Cookie in that situation? And they are all taking his health very, very seriously. And Clevinger and Plesac are two outstanding pitchers. I know we talked about the Indians' propensity to be able to swing a bat earlier, but we all know that their rotation is really their biggest strong suit. And that is a huge, huge loss for this team.
And that's why it's so interesting, is that Mike Clevinger and Zach Plesac will be a big part of the Indians getting to the postseason, if they indeed get to the postseason. And now you have two guys that you wonder about the clubhouse chemistry. You wonder about internal discipline. You wonder about what you just said, because there's a betrayal there almost. We see with the Cubs and how they have dotted every I and crossed every T and adhered to every protocol strictly. And you see the carryover effect on the field. Now, that's not necessarily meaning that if you follow everything, you're going to play better baseball, but there is a connection there to be drawn, and you wonder if the opposite is true. If you see a team that is running into the issues that the Indians, you know, created for themselves, what will this lead to for them? They lost last night to the Cubs, and you wonder if they will now go into a tailspin because of the turmoil they have found themselves in.
Yeah, it's AL Central problems. I'm so used to seeing the Indians play the White Sox, too. It's jarring. But they've got such a solid foundation when you think about Tito Francona and the veterans that are not only in their lineup, but on their pitching staff. And they lost Clevinger last year, if you'll recall, to an injury. This is a much different season. But it does change how this situation sets up. And what's interesting is, I hate talking about it from a baseball perspective in a way, because to come out the way they did and say for Pluko to say what he said, I just thought it was so strong. And he ends up changing his role a little bit because of it. But they have a starting rotation that I think is one of the best in baseball. What surprised me the most is if you take the Central as a whole, David, the Cubs are sitting pretty at 11-3, but the rest of the division in the NL Central is below 500. The AL Central is not. The Kansas City Royals, clearly 7-11, but Minnesota's at 6-11. Then you have Detroit at 609-6. Cleveland is 10-8, and the White Sox are the fourth place out of five teams in this division at 500. The AL Central has been bringing it so far, even though we're so early on in this season. So Clevinger and Plesac are definitely above replacement players in that pitching rotation. So how will this affect things moving forward? You definitely want those two if you're the Indians facing the Twins.
Yeah, and we have Kyle Hendricks going against the Indians tonight for the Cubs, and the Sox counter against the Tigers again with Dylan Cease on the mound, and that will be fun to watch tonight. Layla, it has been fun having you in here. And, you know, you have a following, and we have heard from a lot of people on our trusty text line, the text zone brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin, and a lot of people are just glad to hear your voice after what you've been through the last week. I didn't obviously want to have, you know, here under these circumstances, but it's terrific to have you back on the air. It's terrific to hear you talk baseball. I think a lot of people followed what you, you know, leaving NBC Sports Chicago last week and just felt bad for you because they had gotten used to you. And I think that's a compliment to what you have brought to this market. And it's just a shame. And I'll just say this, because we've seen friends in the business, women who have been, we've come used to hearing and seeing on television in the last year, you know, with Sierra Santos and Megan Mowicki, Kelly Kroll, Shea Pepler. There are too few women on our television sets talking about sports and bringing us these stories. And I know that you will bounce back, and we're glad to be part of that rebound, and I don't know what's next, but we're glad you're here today, because I think a lot of people appreciate what you have to offer, and whether it's your candor or your humor, but we're glad that you joined us today, because this went fast.
Well, I really do appreciate it. This just flew by, and I joked, David, the last time you and I co-hosted together was March Madness of last year, and I said it was a couple of years, but that's how it really feels. I worked last Sunday at NBC Sports Chicago, so it has felt like, I don't know, a month and a half since then, but I just really appreciate everybody's support on Twitter, on Facebook, on every other possible medium I can think of, I think even LinkedIn. I thought I could get to everybody, and I can, and I just can't say thanks enough. And the Score has always supported me, and the listeners have always supported me. You guys have absolutely made me a better broadcaster, and the sorority that we had in Chicago of strong women, and not just women, but reporters overall doing sports, is one that I'm very proud to be proud of. The women you named are all so incredibly successful and talented and can do pretty much anything they want. And, you know, Kelly's in Atlanta. Sierra is in her hometown of Arizona. Shea is now working on the East Coast with Jordan, even though they're not at the same spot. Caitlin Sharkey is here now, so shout out to Caitlin.
Right.
But
yeah, And Dion Miller at Channel 7, certainly, yes. And Lauren Majera at Channel 9. Yeah, so there are definitely...
And Taylor and Elise at Marquee. And I think, to me, the biggest compliment I can take is I wasn't considered just a woman who talks sports, even though I am, and I enjoy being one. But people appreciated my takes and personality and my flaws. And that, to me, has always meant the most. And everybody has always made me feel like I found a home here and like it's family. And I was a little candid on Twitter because I really did just want to go to CVS. I just talked to my mom when the news broke. I wasn't prepared to talk about it publicly yet. For me, it probably would have been at least another week just to get my affairs in order. But I really do want to say thank you to everybody. And that includes the Score listeners for the entire time that I've been here.
That's tremendous. Well, before we get out of here, I need to tap into your background in the deep heart of Texas, because we know that you went to University of North Texas, correct?
Yes, Go Mean Green.
In Denton, Texas. It's not Dillon, Texas, the fictional home of Friday Night Lights, which I just love. I can't believe you've never seen that, but that's another story. So, Layla, before we get out of here, quickly, the Big 12 is on the clock. While I think the SEC and the ACC are sort of in denial, the Big 12 is on the clock. They're on the fence. And knowing that conference as well as you do, what do you expect them to do next after the Big 10 made its big decision yesterday to postpone the season and the Pac-12 followed suit? Where is the Big 12 in all of this?
I covered Texas during conference realignment when all of that went down in 2011. And if you'll remember, of course, Nebraska was the team that was the first domino to put all of this in motion. The Big Ten was setting trends then. I think they've set another one. The Big 12 largely is based in states that are still trying to function at a different process and rate than others. And Jerry DiNardo made a good point when he said that the Power Five conferences are relatively regional and they've left this up to themselves. But that went out the window when Rutgers got into the Big Ten, when Colorado got into the Pac-12. You can't call yourselves regional anymore. Texas A&M and Texas don't play each other. And that's a topic that I could spend an hour talking about because it's just ridiculous. But the point is, you can't have everybody do what they want like this. It's a whack-a-mole strategy, and it's a partial situation. As a football fan, I don't think Clemson fans want to sit there and say that they won the survivor pool. They want to beat the best team. So even if you take a look at it from a football standpoint, I don't know that it's the best move either. But Texas was late to the party when it came to shutting down everything. Then they were prematurely early when it came to opening things up. I worry for my mother and my family. I tend to think the same pattern will fall when it comes to football as well. What's interesting to me, and I find really funny, is Nebraska, who couldn't get out of the Big 12 fast enough, is now considering possibly joining it back.
We'll play.
Well, let's see
what
happens.
They want to play anybody and everybody. You're right.
Yeah. Well, you were cool at this in 2011. My, how it changes.
Yeah, and I just worry that we're going to have a couple conferences going rogue, and we're going to have about 50 schools playing football. If that, and you were going to have two seasons, and it's going to be continuous, it's going to be confusing, and it's going to be complex, and most of all, I think, unfortunately, it's going to be dangerous, and the health and safety of some of these kids are not going to be taken put forth as a priority, and that's a shame. But we will see what's next for the Big 12 and college football. We want to remind you that Matt Spiegel is in for Dan Bernstein today. Following us, Matt Spiegel has a full show. He's got Mike Florio at 10, Kevin Weeks from the NFL Network, from the NHL Network at 10:20. Len Casper joins Spiegs at 11 to talk a little music and maybe even about the Cubs and some baseball. I'd like to thank everybody for calling and texting and listening. Most of all, thank you to Layla Rahimi for joining us today in place of Molly. Also, thank you to Dustin Rhodes, our executive producer.
I thought our spirit was really good.
And Kevin Zipak running the show in the studio.
Person, woman, man, camera, TV.
Ray Diaz. Oh, we always love Ray.
Clean it up a little bit.
Layla, this was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed it.
I appreciated it. I really, really did. I think you guys know why. Thank you, David.
Thank you for joining us. Stay tuned here all day on The Score. We're building up to the Cubs baseball tonight. Kyle Hendricks back at the scene of the glory. First time pitching in Cleveland since Game 7. Zach, Pat, and Ron here on The Score. Thanks for listening. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This segment brought to you by Door Systems, now offering touch-free doors. Call 1-800-THE-DOOR.
End the story.
I see you soon, baby.
If it is to be said, so it be. So it is.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.